Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, bienvenue, willkommen, and my personal favorite, welcome to Tippy Tappy Sports. It's the Timms Brothers once again, and we've got quite a lot to get through since we last spoke. But of
who's the welcome?
That's
Tony Tzindelakis. Tony Tzindelakis, a figure known to many of our listeners.
Yeah. I think everyone knows the generic old ethnic bloke who says welcome.
Who's the babysitter when your parents are on holiday? He's sort of sitting there in his polyester pants and his transition lenses. You walk in the door with your school uniform on, and he's like, "Welcome." Good look.
Yeah, it's a good look. It's a good feeling. How are you, Aaron? Have you sorted out your Halloween costume?
Yeah, I actually have. After that bowling performance in the final over against New Zealand, I'll be going as Mitchell Starc's balls. I will be going as his acne-pocked duck. I think that could be quite good, and we'll play well with the local crowd here in Brooklyn, Queens. Yeah. What about you, Damien? No, what are you planning on going as this year?
We don't actually celebrate Halloween in Australia, Aaron.
Yeah. You do more and more. More and more people are getting into it. You're getting into the spirit of it. You've had some quite good costumes over the years, haven't you?
I have. I did a year as a pumpkin spice latte. That was...
That's wonderful.
Just that time of year. Just a wonderful time of year.
Yeah. Horse girl fall.
Sorry. What's that?
Yeah. No. You don't. So it's okay. Just move on. When the cultural references don't work, we don't. We're not editing. We're not taking time to explain things. We're not footnoting. We're just moving straight on. Okay.
You've got to move straight on. It's a big show. It's a big show. So much has happened since we last spoke. Let's start with the cricket, then we can move on.
I mean, I was just going to say, do we have any? Because I mean, we've done this. Because now that we're professionalizing this whole outfit and kind of competing more straightforwardly with the great cricketer, you know, the final word, whatever it's called, the Peter Lawler, Gideon Haig one that no one listens to. It's just them talking about like Sonic Youth or whatever. Do we have any feedback? Because, I mean, that's the first segment that we've sort of settled into. I'm just wondering, you know, what are the listeners saying?
Do we have any feedback? I've had a few other suggestions for our phantom guest in addition to Wayne Arthur's.
Yes.
Someone thought Kevin Muscat would be a good guest.
Yes.
I'm not really sure if Muskie would be the kind of right bloke. He's just he's probably a bit too straight and would no doubt take offence to being referred to as a trundler.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, and he is capable of doing physical violence to you. So maybe, you know, maybe we don't want to take that risk. He's probably knee deep in what would it be now? Preseason preparations at Yokohama Marinos. he'd be deep in preseason preparations with the Marinos. but I got some feedback. I was just saying that because I have something. Raymond Lowe actually DM'd me on Instagram and said, "Tippy Tappy podcast reminds me of our chats outside of Fisher Library, only less funny." I don't think Paul Rifle was underrated. In fact, I would go so far as to say he was rated. Thank you for that, Raymond. Please don't DM me again.
Raymond Lowe can get.
Yeah, that's right. No, I don't actually agree with Raymond on that about Paul Rifle. I don't think anyone's out there sort of, you know, he doesn't appear in any of the retrospectives. You don't sort of, when people are kind of, you know, waxing nostalgic about Australian cricket in the 1990s, there isn't like a big section reserved for Paul Rifle. He's not telling the anecdotes. He's not saying, you know, Booney drank 50 tinnies on the way to London or whatever. You know, like there's none of that from Paul Rifle. Paul Rifle doesn't feature because Paul Rifle's not very interesting.
No, well, he has neither the oversized, you know,
moustache and stomach of Merv Hughes, or the lineage of Craig McDermott.
Yeah, he's just got the little Anglo or possibly German hyphen. He's got the little sort of Northern European rat face. And
yeah, he's the
that's
Dominic Thiem of his generation.
kind of, yeah. I mean, well, I say Dominic Thiem is maybe a little better looking. Although he did go kind of very ugly. When he lost form, he also lost his looks to a degree.
Well,
Would be
doesn't that
interesting
tell a
to
story?
would be interesting to actually sort of represent this graphically when we get into sort of the data journalism vertical for the Tippy Tappy Sports podcast, to like sort of Jared Kimber style, you know, who does all the graphics in his video sort of recaps of all the World Cup games.
Yeah, it's
You know,
completely
looks
unnecessary.
and form often go together, don't they? So yeah, he sort of got very thin for a while and wasn't very good, but he seems to be coming back into some form. But what else was I gonna say? Yeah, Paul Rifle, what would you say he has? He has the ball that nips away.
It just slightly takes it. It just slightly takes it away. It takes away. Like,
takes the edge off. Takes the edge off.
it's just annoying. His bowling is annoying because his personality is presumably annoying. He's just kind of there niggling away.
Yeah.
He reminds me of like some of those guys. And I like those guys at law school, like those sort of stinky Anglos who
Yeah.
were always, would kind of always turn up to something, but would never actually provide any vibes,
Right.
never
Just
kind of be.
stand in the conversation. Just be there. You know.
Stand in the conversation. Then they'd go and do a summer clerkship at some middling law firm like
Yeah.
Johnson, Winter, Slattery, or whatever. And
Yeah,
now
that.
they're at HWL or some crap like
Yeah,
that.
they'd sort of be at the party, kind of maybe hitting the cones, maybe getting on the cones, sort of in a quiet way. But I mean, and this is what sort of just quietly coning up on the side on the sideline, and then sort of joining the conversation circle and not saying anything. That is essentially what Paul Rifle is as a bowler. And so, I mean, how many other podcasts out there in the greater cricketing universe are devoting the first 5 minutes of each episode to going in on Paul Rifle? I mean,
Piling on Paul Rifle. Now,
this is our edge. This
forget
is our
about
angle.
quiet
This is our
quitting.
point of differentiation.
Forget about quiet quitting. It's all about quiet coning.
Yeah, exactly. Quiet coning. Yeah, anyway, so Australia.
No, the cricket. No, but coming to your
Yeah.
point about when someone's looks, when their form goes,
Yeah.
their looks go. You can actually say the same thing. About Glenn Maxwell, and there's been a remarkable turnaround since we last spoke,
Oh,
right? You just bring it back.
he's looking so good, isn't he? His skin
We bring it back to
is
the cricket. That's right. His skin is looking good. Maybe he's had some Ayurvedic sessions, in between the game against Sri Lanka
Yeah.
and then that game against the Netherlands, because obviously, we piled on him last time and said how
Yeah.
rubbish he was
Yeah.
getting out, and then I'm not sure how
Oh,
much
because
of that is.
he went in for the big wolf dart on the first ball.
Well,
Yeah.
that innings again, and it's sure it was against the Dutch,
The Dutch, yeah.
the South Africans, the third grade Australians, but
Yes.
it was genuinely impressive that he would manage to destroy that attack in the
Yeah.
space of 44 balls or whatever. And
Yeah.
Australia was, going along at a reasonable pace, looking at a respectable score, but to then, score 399, with him scoring, was it like 106 or whatever off 42 deliveries?
106 or 44 deliveries, yeah, striking at 240.9.
I
Got
mean,
stats in front of me here. So got any other questions about the
just
scorecard, just let me know.
you could just see his physical beauty coming to the fore as the innings continued.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, and you'd say probably it's influenced by climates. I mean, Delhi, a bit more northern, maybe a bit cooler.
It is a bit
Yeah,
cooler.
sort of Delhi to Dharamshala is sort of good from a complexion perspective, I think, in this World
That's
Cup. We've
right.
seen a lot of good skin on display at
Great skin.
those grounds, whatever they're called.
Yeah.
Just pure. just pure hitting. I mean, yes, it was just the Dutch, but it's just great to see. It's kind of like Messi scoring these goals against these crap defenses in America. It's just great to see like someone who's obviously superior shred the person they're playing against, you know?
Yeah. And completely, and to be able to tonk all of the bowlers in so many different ways is really quite impressive.
It was good stuff. It was a lot of sort of ramp shots, a lot of the
Reverse sweep for
the,
six.
The reverse sweep, all the classics.
Anyone who can do a reverse sweep for six, which is basically, it's like taking a cricket bat and playing a backhand but hitting it for six is actually ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous.
You've tried it a few times.
No.
Well, I mean, in theatre sports rules, yes, and you've tried it a few times, haven't you, mate?
Oh, theatre sports. Can't wait for the Cranston Cup final.
This is, you know, the rules, the protocols of the Tippy Tappy Sports podcast are a combination of theatre sports and Chatham House. You know, put those two together and you have recipe for success.
Theatre House.
So it is, it's kind of like, you know, it's like hitting a tennis ball with a toothpick. Good analogy.
The other good thing about that game against the Dutch was that it obviously took place in Delhi at Ferozshah Kotla.
One of your favorite stadiums.
Probably my second favorite Indian stadium. If only for the fact that it has that grandstand that has like the weirdly angled seats. I'm not sure if you've seen, but you know, obviously normally the grandstands sit as a parallel to the ground, and that, you know, the things are constructed in a vertical way. But this has the grandstand that, you know, sort of goes at where the second tier is at, like an angle of about sort of 15 degrees. So you sort of have this sort of weird, I mean, I'll have to put some images up so that
I was going to say that sounds like a stand at a sports stadium. Like the seats are, the gradient of the seats is like 15 degrees. That's kind of normal. They're not just flat.
No, but that's where that would be fine if you were, if you are facing directly onto the ground. But here, I'll need to get some images.
Yeah, let's get some visuals up. Let's embrace it. Let's film this. We should just film it Colo style.
Clearly not explaining this very well.
Yeah, it's like I don't quite understand. Is it like the one where we played the test where it has that weird grandstand with the, like, it looks like a car park?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, that's the one you're talking about. Yeah, of course. We're talking about the same thing.
That's it. That's Ferozshah Kotla.
Well, okay, but it's not there. So the seats, it's just that it looks like a car park. That's how
it is a car park.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there we go. Let's go and park there.
It's the Indian version of the drive-in. You don't go and watch a movie. You just go and watch the cricket.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. So that was good. And then, of course, the game against New Zealand. The would we call it a grudge match? Not really. It's like it's a lame kind of playing New Zealand, isn't it? But it was a good one. You stayed up for that one, I assume.
I stayed up. I watched until New Zealand were about sort of six down. And obviously, Rachin was still in. But it looked like he was running out of partners. But things just appeared to sort of, or the tension appeared to be sort of, you know, increasing with every kind of over, because
with Niche, still, Niche and Santner.
Yeah,
or Neesham mostly. Yeah, mostly Neesham, right? Jimmy.
Neesham. Jimmy Neesham and Mitchell Santner.
You sound like a New Zealander.
you can't get away without doing a Kiwi accent. I know this.
I just want to say, like, I know this is a long time ago now, but when we were in the hostel in Avignon and I started laughing at the guy's New Zealand accent, You gave me a very stern lecture afterwards, saying you can't do that because he's going to beat us up or something.
Well,
I was like, come on, mate. No one cares.
To put it into context, I mean, the guy looked like an extra from Once Were Warriors.
Yeah.
Did he look as though he was like the sanest guy going around? Did he look as though the slightest thing would sort of set him off? Probably. What would that thing be? Some kind of smart ass Australian doing a Kiwi accent.
That episode combined with the bed bugs in that hostel that we were in, saw us move to a 2-star hotel where I think we flooded the whole room and then just like walked out.
Yeah.
Just like sort of threw the keys at the reception and kind of walked out the next morning. He's like, merci. A la prochaine.
His brother's take on Avignon.
Yeah, it was Avignon's never recovered from that. You know, the grand papal history.
But no, it was the game was it was certainly a lot closer than I expected it to be. And I guess Australia really did have to win because they've now moved up into third on the table.
I think they're still fourth, aren't they? They're still fourth on net run rate.
Net run rate.
Net run rate. Table. Yeah, let's just have a look here. Still fourth. Just a little bit behind New Zealand, but equal on points. And you would say, well, that's pretty much the top four, isn't it? I don't think it's going to change. It's just a question of I'd actually prefer us to play South Africa, I think, in the semis. Because like India just seemed very good. Because South Africa are on top right now, although India have the game in hand. They're playing England, obviously, in a few hours. But, South Africa just, you know, I know they had the blip against the Dutch and they almost blew it against Pakistan, right? But, chasing, they got the monkey off their back, didn't they? The chasing monkey. But, I just think it's better to play them, isn't it? Because they're going to choke, obviously.
Yeah,
a massive choke. Is it better to have the South African choke in the semis or in the final?
Oh, I think you probably just want it in the semis.
Just get it out of the way, nice and early, and then have the Indian choke in the final.
I mean, what India didn't choke was it? It was 2011, wasn't it? When the World Cup was last in India, and
that's right. That was they won. Yeah, Modi. Not Modi, the other guy. Dhoni and Modi, you know, they're interchangeable, essentially. Both great athletes in their own way.
But men of the people.
But Dhoni, I mean, Dhoni's still, he's, you know, there was a lot of Dhoni love in India when you were there, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was.
He's still the most beloved, like more than Sachin, I think. Because Sachin's obviously a bit of a weird guy.
He's got
the sort of silly hairstyle, and he's
and the high he's voice.
He's got the sort of the kind of questionable rich guy taste in shirts. You know, he's always got kind of the patterned shirt or whatever.
Yeah, or it's like a glossy aubergine or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's not good. It's not good. Whereas Dhoni, I think, is just more, you know, just shorts and a t-shirt and just get some beers.
Kingfishers and a kurta.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd like to get some kurta.
South African.
Yeah, well, you made it sound South African.
I don't think
So that's all pretty good, and played against New Zealand, and well, Travis Head. Here's something we can
talk about. Travis Head. I mean, not only does he channel facial hair from the late '80s, you know, Australian team, but he kind of plays like he's like a more attacking version of Alan Border or something, because he kind of has the same.
He's got the same sort of build. He has the same like little squat thing before the as the ball is being delivered. And you know, he's sort of, there's that kind of springiness off the crease, right? You know, he sort of like launches into the ball. He's very like he's very Australian, right? As a batsman, he hits the ball really hard. Like if he can't sort of hit the ball hard, then he's not going to have a successful innings. He's just sort of got kind of one mode of playing, and you know, he either scores it, you know, sort of two runs a ball or whatever, or he gets out. And that's what we want. That we don't want, you know, Marnus Labuschagne, you know, building in innings. I mean, it's like, but we've done that. We've done this actually in every one of these matches where we've started to actually sort of find some form. It's like there have been really good elements of the batting performance, and then, you know, either the middle order's collapsed or the top order hasn't scored anything, or, you know, there's just sort of been something off in every moment. So like each of these innings where we scored more than 300, I felt like we were going to go on and score more than 400, right?
Yeah.
And it just hasn't happened. Like, I mean, we were, you know, I watched the first 10 overs, or the first 20 overs or whatever. The first 10 overs, we're on pace to break the world record for most runs scored in the first 10 overs. And then it kind of just sort of, you know, trundled off into, you know, kind of Marnus Labuschagne, you know, with the gum and the sort of... the gum and the flicks and the tricks. It's like, mate, just hit some sixes.
You're not here to noodle the ball around. Like, yeah, no noodling,
no quiet coning. You know, he actually would be a quiet coner. You know, him and Steve Smith would probably be sort of coning on together in the corner and sort of giggling about, you know, what tape they use on the ball. Oat milk, or what tape they use on the tennis ball that they sort of sleep with every night or whatever. and then they'd come back into the conversation and sort of get totally Alfred by sort of Mitch Marsh and Dave Warner or whatever. But well, should we go through and discuss the most important issue, of course, which is Nerds v Julios in the Australian, the classic dichotomy of Australian cricket, Nerds and Julios. David Warner, Julio. Travis Head?
Nerd.
Yeah, I'd say he's sort of, he straddles Nerd Julio, right? I think he has a bit of both. Mitch Marsh, I think, is definitely a Julio. Steve Smith, Nerd. Yeah. Marnus?
Nerd.
Glenn Maxwell?
Julio.
Josh Inglis, I don't really know enough about him to know. 38 off
28. He's got the facial hair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. TBC. We'll table that one. Pat Cummins. Well, Pat Cummins is an interesting one, isn't he? Because he obviously has like Julio energy, but I think he thinks of himself as kind of a nerd. He's like sort of, you know, like a himbo with this sort of misplaced sense of his own intellect or something.
Yeah. The thinking man's himbo.
Mitch Stark.
It's an interesting one. It's because I'm sure he falls into this category of where someone thinks that, like, just because they're like very tall
and very fast,
they're somehow not a nerd.
Yeah, exactly. But I think he is a nerd, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got like the cricket playing wife or girlfriend or whatever she is. Zampa.
What a bore that must be.
I know. It's like they're just talking about cricket all the time. It's like, oh, did you see that ball at such and such old? Like, who cares?
Yeah. I mean, you know, but also his father-in-law is Ian Healy. Of all the least likable characters in Australian cricket, to have to sort of deal with on Christmas Day.
Sort of the Christmas Day Logani. Ian Healy sort of just sort of waddling his chin around. Yeah, but he's obviously a very, very boring guy. Adam Zampa, I think he's given nerd, right?
But I think he's like, you know, of a product of his generation, right? And that he seems to, he gives off the nerd vibes, but I think he very much considers himself a Julio. Like
he's woke.
Exactly.
That is his power. The coffee. He's got the, you know, he wore the for Major League Cricket. He had the, his jersey number was 420. To lend his voice to the legalization of marijuana in Texas.
Right.
And to this day,
quite coning there.
marijuana remains illegal in Texas, despite the best efforts of Adam Zampa's cricket jersey exploits. Josh Hazlewood is obviously a nerd, right? And out of these, who do you think? Obviously,
you've forgotten our favorite
Stoins.
Yeah, Stoins.
Stoins is Julio. Julio nerd.
Is the captain. Is the captain of the Julios.
The captain. I think so, right? And I was just going to say, because I think it's important to be topical. We've obviously dipped our toe into the treacherous waters of Israel Gaza in previous episodes, and suffered, copped some flack for that. That's fine. Yep. You've got to stand up for your principles. Just to keep things topical, Matthew Perry's just died in his jacuzzi. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, so I heard that he drowned in the jacuzzi.
He drowned in his jacuzzi, which I think seems quite difficult to do. But I mean, but also, like, what a great way to go.
So
now, why am I bringing this up here? I was just thinking, like, which one of these players, the nerds and the Julios, would be most likely to go that way? Probably, probably Stoinis.
I think that might be a bit too obvious.
Warner.
Yeah.
Warner's probably got a jacuzzi. Warner would have a jacuzzi in his house.
No, but he paints the picture of being the wholesome guy. He's got the Instagram account for his three kids.
Yeah, he does the dancing and all that kind of stuff. It's like, well, he's got demons. Obviously, he's hiding something, isn't he? None of us buy that. What, that he just likes dancing around the house with his kids? Come on, he's a cheat. The guy's a cheat. You know, he's a scumbag. Good innings though. He batted very well.
Great innings. You know, he was second on the list of most runs scored.
Oh yeah. No, it's good. So we're coming good, which is good, because we'll probably get knocked out in the semis now, and it'll be yet another underwhelming World Cup for Australia. But how do you feel at this point in the tournament? We obviously at the start of the tournament were saying, well, what is the point of one day cricket and why are we playing this thing? How do you feel about it now that you've sort of been watching every match in the tournament and absorbing the trivia and the stats and the drama? The fizzle, the colour.
Yeah, the fizzle, the colour, the flicks and the tricks. It obviously reinforces what we did say in that first episode, and that the thing that is good about 50 overs, and maybe this is where T20 has actually had a very positive influence on the 50 overs, is because you get the batsmen who do play as though it is a T20 game, and if they do get out, there is a period where you can consolidate and you can noodle the ball around Labuschagne sort of style. And then there are opportunities for someone like a Glenn Maxwell to come in later on in the innings. And if he does start, provided he doesn't, hoik himself out first ball.
Right.
Then you can get some sort of late innings fireworks, which is very exciting. And I mean, I've only watched the highlights from the game against New Zealand.
I only watched highlights of two or three Australian matches, but I'm really getting into the spirit of the World Cup.
No, but you know, when you've got a team that's chasing 399 to win or whatever it is, and they get five runs from the target, then it's like it's a bit like some of those Test matches. Dare I say, the miracle of Headingley, where you've got. Where it feels like as though the victory target is incredibly far away, but with every boundary, with every misfield, you just feel the tension kind of ratchet up, and you don't get that in T20. So, it always surprises me to say this, but I'm actually I'm a supporter. I'm a supporter of the 50 over format.
You're a convert, a re-convert.
Yeah. That's right.
You lost your faith, but now you've found it again.
That's right. I mean, what's the Greek word for that?
Well, losing faith would be apostasy, I think.
That's right.
And find it again is
All you know, all Damascene conversion put a point to Unai Emery.
That's right. Wow. What a week he's had. What a week he has had. Has he done anything? And so you want to move on now, I suppose, to the football.
Yes, yes.
Or do you want to do the rugby first?
Maybe, yeah. Let's do the rugby. We can keep the accents going.
Yeah, get the big ones out of the way first. Yeah.
Yeah, but we.
It's Faf de Klerk. There's some amazing names in that team, aren't there?
No, let's talk about the rugby.
Did you stop recording? Are you going to edit this out in post? Because I think it's good just to leave, like Pompidou Center style, just show you're working.
Yeah. Oh.
You know, let people see the inside of the sausage, you know?
Right, Renzo would be proud. Like, we might not do video, but we actually, our point of difference is we don't edit the podcast.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Minimal intervention podcasting.
Exactly. It's organic. It's no sulfites. It's biodynamic.
That's right.
We follow the cycle of the moon. We put blood in the soil, you know, and at the end of it all, here's a glass of wine that tastes horrible.
It tastes off. Great. Yeah. Delicious.
Oh, so stinky.
$23.
The rugby, good to see the box get up again. Does this mean they've won 4 World Cups now, so they're the most successful rugby nation in the world. Is that what we have to say now?
Yeah, I mean, that's why it was good that it was South Africa and New Zealand, because they were both on three shootout titles.
Yes.
And I think, you know, they're a proven tournament success. Like, they seem to have, their form seems to wildly fluctuate between World Cups.
Yeah, but they come good for the World Cup, Eddie Jones style.
Yeah, ever since the heartbreak of the 99 World Cup semi-final against Australia, they've kind of gotten their act together.
We all remember that. What happened in that one again?
That's the Stephen Larkham drop goal.
Oh, the Stephen Larkham, of course, Bernie.
Back when Australian rugby was kind of good.
What's Bernie up to these days? He's probably commentating on
Fox Sports or financial advisor for.
Oh, yeah, he'd absolutely be like fun manager.
Yeah,
you know, sort of advising sort of people on.
Big on industrial.
It'd mostly just be like what team to put in their fantasy league or whatever. Like, I don't think he actually does like proper financial advice, you know. But it was a good match. Did you manage to watch it, Damien?
Well, it was on at a slightly inconvenient time.
So that's no, because I did watch it, so I can actually provide some knowledge here and insight.
Please.
So I watched it and, it was pretty tense. Look, it's just kicks. It's just a lot of kicks. I mean, the South Africans just have better at kicking. Like, you know, New Zealand had that, penalty in the last sort of 3 minutes or whatever, and the guy sent it wide.
Bowden Barrett?
Yeah, Bazza. One of the many Barretts.
Sucked into all the Barrett brothers.
Yeah, exactly. But it was. I mean, New Zealand had a guy sent to the sin bin for actually two players sent to the sin bin. So they played 20 minutes of the match without a man down. Yeah. And I thought they looked better actually. I mean, so they were just kind of sort of boring, grinding, kind of. Racist kind of players, you know. a lot of the players are black now, so it's like, how racist is South African rugby now, really? You know, we don't know. All we can do is speculate because we don't have any actual knowledge. So it was good. It was tense, you know. It was a final. Was it a classic? Not really. There weren't that many sort of line breaks. I mean, where was the razzle dazzle? Where were the goose steps? You know, where was Joe Roth?
David Campese.
Ben Tune. Where's Ben Tune? Big mouth, big high cheekbones, sort of swept back hair. Wonderful player. Wonderful player.
Yeah,
but
well.
yeah, it was, so it was, you know, it was a little bit boring. I mean, I haven't watched all that much of this World Cup, to be honest. I mean, I watched like Australia's first match. I watched the opening match, and it was, yeah, I don't know. Like, rugby seems to have really gone down the tubes, actually.
Right, right.
You know, would I say that I'm worried? No, because I don't care. But it just doesn't seem as exciting. It's free flowing. There are no sort of weird little French guys scoring length of the field sort of tries.
Well, it was the French were good. They were obviously one of the favorites for the tournament. But
yeah,
I mean, it's like, because it is a World Cup, because of the format, of course you would expect all of the games from the quarterfinals onwards to be incredibly tense.
Mm.
You'll occasionally get a bit of a blowout, as you did for the New Zealand Argentina semi-final.
Yeah,
because the reality is, no matter how much huffing and puffing someone like Michael Checker does, Argentina, I mean, they're not going to beat New Zealand in a World Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, while the final, as you say, was tense, if it was a boring game, it's because that's how South Africa plays. Like, they're,
yeah. Well,
you know, they might be more inclusive. I mean, you know, boring has no colour. You know what I mean?
Rugby World Cup recap finished.
Well, more importantly, like, oh,
well,
we have less than a minute.
We're going to stop the recording now. I was trying to do it elegantly so that it didn't sort of, no seams, just a seamless kind of.
Seamless. Oh, just like Birdman.
Okay, I'm recording.
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, I've just resumed my voice memo.
That's great. Yeah, I never stopped, actually, because I just thought, let's just go all the way through. Let's get all that, all the interstitials, all the off noises.
Yep. Get it all in.
We're talking about
the rugby. No, wait, we've got to finish talking about the rugby.
We don't have anything else to say about it, mate.
No, we don't. I mean, what I thought you might have a handle on is, you know, where the South Africans might be celebrating in Paris. You know, you've got Sia Kolisi and all the boys, you know, tearing it up in whatever nightclub that they
Rue Oberkampf, just some dingy little club with sort of a sticky dance floor. And they all go out for a song with Greg afterwards. I mean, that's still basically what nightlife in Paris is, isn't it? It's not a very evolved sort of nightlife scene, would you say?
Look, who knows? I mean, it's been a while since I've you know, been to
been a while since you went out clubbing in the Marais. Well, they might be going down to Las du Falafel. Sort of waiting in line for sort of 3 hours to get a sort of mediocre falafel.
Well,
where else would they go? I mean, I don't know where the big sort of like loser kind of partying sport player clubs would be in Paris. Probably up like round Pigalle. It'd be up around Pigalle or something, wouldn't it?
That seems a bit more gentrified area. Yeah. From all the reading I've done about.
Well, from the intel I've had from Parisian contacts, apparently Pigalle now is quite sophisticated.
You know, and once again, oh, look, we've hit a new record. It's only taken 35 minutes for you to get into
sort of Andrew Orsatti / Alex Daniels voice, kind of just generic wog voice.
So, but put it this way, Paris is still Paris, you know?
You know what I'm saying?
That's a good point, mate.
Yeah.
So okay, Rugby World Cup done.
Tick. That's 2023. I'm not sure where 2027 is, but we can worry about that in 4 years' time.
I just
think it's great that the Southern Powers have reasserted their rugby superiority.
Yeah, you do seem to have quite a lot of Southern Hemisphere pride, don't you?
Very proud. Very proud.
Very, proud. Just like you just love being south of the equator. I think that we're historically sort of underrepresented, maligned, marginalized community. Peoples. That's probably true. But
it's gonna be celebrated.
But look, let's go to the
Northern Hemisphere. It's gonna be Japan, isn't it?
I thought it was going to be in Japan. No, maybe I'm wrong about that. But to the Northern Hemisphere sports.
Was there in 2015?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. It's a good point.
Northern Hemisphere sports. Good
get, man. I was just testing. Northern Hemisphere sports, the Arsenal.
The Arsenal and...
It is Arsenal.
And
I thought it would be Arsenal. It is Arsenal.
Great result overnight. Eddie Nketiah. What... Is that he's had one good game against like the worst team in the
league. I know. It's like, I mean, yes, his third goal was fantastic, obviously, but please come on. We all know the real striker is Jesus. Like, I mean, Jesus's turn. I mean, that turn, no matter what. How good Nketiah's goal was against Sheffield United. You know, we're already up 2-0 and we've won the match, so who cares? The turn and the assist for the Martinelli goal against Sevilla were just pure cream, you know, cream. Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic. Yeah. And obviously his goal was great as well. But, I mean, just the mastery. That was like real sort of Bergkamp stuff, you know? I know it was a through ball like into open space, but I mean it was still it had to be perfectly weighted and all that, and to set it up with that turn was just insane.
Yeah, you know, you still have to play it. He's got the velvety touch, so that's the kind of thing that Nketiah would never be able to do. What is interesting though is that I can't remember. You know what you and I were saying back in the Invincibles season, but to be 10 games in and not to have lost a match, but obviously to also have Tottenham having not lost a match, and for them to be on 25 points, even though Arsenal's goal difference is now better, it doesn't sort of feel as though. You know, people would talk about, oh, okay, well, Arsenal might actually go the season, you know, undefeated. I mean, it's all a bit like they're playing well, they're playing okay.
I suppose that does raise the question of whether you were saying that in 2003, 2004. What were you saying in 2003, 2004?
I probably don't remember.
I'm late for work again. I hate my job.
I don't want to go to work.
Yeah. I'm tired. I don't know that people were like, oh, you know, this team is obviously going to go. But I mean, obviously it's different because that team was already sort of so well regarded. And obviously, as we know, should have won the title in 2002-03 as well. So really should have been in line to do three on the trot. So they were, I think they were sort of spoken about as kind of, you know, the obvious title contenders with Manchester United. But it is sort of people are kind of, well, I think Arsenal kind of like slipping under the radar, you know, to the degree that that's possible, which is probably admittedly pretty small. They're not, people aren't sort of getting too excited. I think people expect it now from this Arsenal side that they'll, you know, be there or thereabouts, to use the one of the many discarded potential names for this podcast, there or thereabouts in the title conversation. So and that's good to see. And I mean, you know, Mikel Arteta did sort of rotate his players quite well, I thought, this week. You got the Kiwiors and the Smith Rows out there, and the, you know, the Springs and the Dims and the, you know,
Kai Havertz.
Havertz
got around.
They're quiet Kona. Havertz is a quiet Kona.
Yeah, well, he's German though. Like, you know, that's the only way that they know how to cone.
Yeah, that's true. It's the only way they know how to be in the world, is to just quietly cone and then join the edge of the conversation, not contribute much, and then sort of go off to Berghain or something, and, you know, dance like an idiot for 15 hours. But that was good to see. Good to see, and
some great patterns of play. But obviously, we can't talk about the Premier League without talking about, you know, Ange Postecoglou.
That's a good point, actually. And I don't know, mate. I'm just just trying to do the best for the community and the fans, and just just let them enjoy themselves, and we'll see you in fancy, okay.
Let him dream, mate.
He's sort of falling asleep at the press conference with his hand in his face. But it's actually kind of incredible that there is still sort of the wow, he's doing a really good job pieces being written. It's like, well, we're now sort of
10 games,
a quarter of the way into the season or whatever, more than that. You know, is there anything else to say about this guy? I guess is the point. How many times can we sort of talk about how grounded he is? When's the backlash coming? I guess is what I'm saying. When are we going to get, you know, the anti-Ange pieces being written? That's what I want to say. That's what we're all waiting for.
Like, how, after how many like losses would that be? Is it just one? I mean, obviously at some point there's going to be a tonking by someone or other. Yeah. Like, they're not. Are obviously not going to win every single game this season, whether in the league or in Europe.
No, I know. It's like, well, but I don't think it's so much the tonking. I think the better backlash will just be, well, yeah, this guy's kind of boring. Like, give us a guy with a Spanish accent instead. We're sick of this sort of down to earth, you know, Aussie talking about his experiences of a migrant and wanting to retire on the Greek islands. It's too relatable. There is such a thing as too relatable, you know? We've got to get back to sort of weirdos like Unai Emery. We need more sort of Unai Emery puff pieces. Like, you know, where's that? When are we going to get that?
Yeah, no one's talking about what a genius coach he is, unless you're an Aston Villa fan. But even when you do get pieces about Aston Villa, it's always about, oh, they were so rubbish under Steven Gerrard, but now you know he's done so well. They're all doing great. You know, he's a great coach. It's like he's found his natural home. Yeah, blah blah blah. Like all of this sort of crap.
Yeah, where was that before? What's Steven Gerrard? Oh, he's in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. He's like, Merhaba, alaki feki taki. Steven Gerrard. Did you see that video that he did? it was a good one. I guess so. The other sort of more serious question to take a serious tone and sort of, you know, stop clowning about and actually get real about what this is supposed to be, which is a sporting podcast that gets into the difficult questions, is will this actually have any kind of impact on the way that Australian coaches are regarded in Europe? I mean, we've already mentioned, I guess, the next kind of candidate for, you know, elevation into the big time, big Kevin Muscat, but and I guess Graham Arnold as well. But I mean, what do you think about that?
I don't think. I just don't think, because you've had one coach who has done well. I mean, he's won titles in Japan. He's won titles in Scotland, and now he has been successful, as you would expect him to have been. You know, when he's moved to the Premier League, like, unless unless someone like Muscat or whoever the next big Australian coach is, you know, does something similar and proves it in a number of different leagues, then well, I don't know. I mean, Postecoglou might end up being a bit of an outlier. Mm. I guess.
So what you're saying is, you know, he's won titles in Australia. He's won titles in Japan. He's won titles in Scotland. He's won an Asian Cup with Australia. He's led Tottenham to their best start to the league since they did the double in 1960 and 1961. But is that enough?
No. I mean, it's like, well, that's not.
Is that enough?
I don't think there's going to be like a halo effect whereby people will think, oh, well, Muscat's Australian, Postecoglou's Australian, so Muscat must be all right.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think, you know, I think it could happen because people just like the Australian accent mostly, I think.
It's just different enough.
It's a likable accent. It's obviously based on, you know, southeast English accent. So it's not like some weird dialect. It's not like, you know, French Canadian to French. Yeah. I was watching this guy, you know, this French influencer chef. He's kind of does the videos with the Kiwi idiot in Queensland on Sunday. Andy Cooks.
Andy Hearn.
He's like, hey, babe, what do you want for dinner? He does this guy in Montreal called Laurent Dagenet. So he did these sort of, he's got a book that's out. He's got a cookbook called Always Hungry or Toujours Faim or Toujours Faim or whatever it is, as he would say. And he was doing a tour through France, La France, if you prefer. And he sort of did kind of some videos with some of the French food influencer chefs, like this guy called Woogies, who's like his line that he always uses in all of his videos is j'adore le piment d'Espelette. But he says j'adore le piment d'Espelette, and he whispers it. That's for no particular reason, like it's not funny, it's not interesting, why is he whispering it doesn't make any sense, but that's his line. And so Laurent Dagenet did a thing with this guy Woogies, and I sort of watched it on YouTube because I thought it'd be interesting to sort of just see this guy, you know, interacting in French, because, you know, he's like a native French speaker. But in the video, he was just doing, like, he was talking as if the thing was kind of being cut up with a sort of soundtrack over the top of it. So he wasn't, like, actually using full sentences in his interactions with this guy. He was just doing, what? And it's like, why are you doing this? Like, it's there was no music or anything over the top. It was just very strange.
Right.
There's no point to the anecdote. I just felt that.
No, I think it's good. It's good to sort of, you know, go down a rabbit hole of food influences. And this idea that each bloody food influencer needs to have a particular tagline is incredibly irritating. And it's presumably as a result of what Salt Bae and his stupid salting of the meat. It's now like everyone needs to have like their kind of little thing.
Well, I was going to say, like, Salt Bae obviously doesn't have a tagline because he can't, well, he obviously speaks Turkish, but he can't say anything in English. He's like, he does sound like Nikos's Legado Liguria character. Sounds exactly the same. Fresh water, cold water, yes. But yeah, well, that guy, and obviously your favorite chef, Max, is Sound of Love.
Il suono dell'amore. It's like,
put the garlic in the pan. Parmesan cheese. He doesn't know how to speak any English. He's just sort of,
someone's
beating off the cue cards. He's like, good olive oil, guanciale. That's good stuff. Now, I'm actually writing a piece just to sort of, we've hit the hour mark. So once again, we're kind of the podcasting equivalent of the Australian cricket team, like sort of very hot and cold. Sometimes scoring heavily, other times just kind of all getting out pretty cheaply. But
just noodling
and quietly coning. I'm writing actually something. I'm writing it, you know, I could be writing it right now, but I'm doing this instead. I'm writing something about
Jim Ratcliffe, the guy who's taking over Manchester United, well, he's buying 25% stake in Manchester United. So that's something that all listeners can look out for over the coming days. Should be good.
Where will this piece be published?
This will be in The Guardian, my home as the voice of global football or soccer, as they insist on writing into the copy. Because it's like this weird thing where, you know, I'm writing for The Guardian US, but I'm writing about football for like the global audience, but essentially just writing about the Premier League. So I don't really know what I'm writing about for them, but this is only the second one that I'm doing. And so we have to call it soccer. And so there's this whole, but like I'm the editor I'm dealing with is in Liverpool and calls it football when we talk on the phone. And so it's all
right.
It's all kind of, it's all a bit confusing, but hey, that's the sound of love, you know?
Exactly.
Well, that sounds good. I'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, could be quite interesting, mate. If you want to have a read of that, and I look forward to chatting next time.
Very informative. Thank you for your time.
And Australia plays England next. So we can talk about that. It'll be good to see England just rooted to the bottom of the table.
Yeah. Nice short episode, I think, for that one.
Yeah. Yeah, great.
Okay. Put the garlic in the pan.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. See ya.
Bye. Bye.